evening and welcome to episode 86 of the Dexies podcast, brought to you by GatheringMagic.com. My name is Erin Campbell. A wise person once said that you should dance like nobody is watching, but my guest tonight dances like everybody is watching because they are. They are watching him on his hugely successful stream. He is Kenji Igashira. Hello.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me on.
Hi. Thank you for being on. I have to say my listeners really love you.
Oh, yeah. I hope so. I hope so. I try to put out a good product, but...
You do. Every once in a while, I always book my guests like about a month in advance. So I try to, when I sit down and figure out who I want on the show, I try to get the next 4 weeks figured out or so.
Nice.
And a lot of times I don't know who I want because, to be quite honest, I've reached a point where I can kind of have anyone I want on. and if anything, you have too many choices. So a lot of times I will reach out to my listeners and I'll say, who do you like? Who do you want me to probe? You know, who do you want to know more about? And your name kept coming up a lot. And I admit that I had first kind of dismissed you as just being a streamer. I was like, well, what does he do?
Yeah.
And they were like, he streams. And I was like, is there more?
What
like,
does
what
that
do
mean,
I got
right?
here?
Yeah.
And they were like, well, he's Asian. And I'm like, okay, so that's two things. That's like, what do we got here?
He's Asian and he streams. That's all I got going for right now.
So I admit that I was like, all right, we'll give him a try. So I do research. I research all of my guests pretty thoroughly. And I watched your stream, and it was a four-hour block because you record in, like, blocks, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I loved it, and I had so much fun watching it. I was actually watching it at work. And I put aside my work, and I smiled, and I rooted along with you, and it was a lot of fun. And then I read a couple articles that you've done for Mana Deprived, and I listened to an appearance that you did on Limited Resources. And I was like, there's enough here. I was like, this guy's got something going for him. I want to know more about him. So that's why you're here.
Well, thank you for having me. Hopefully I am everything you wanted and more.
Because the show will be over and it's like, what was I thinking?
Exactly.
Okay, so let's go ahead and get started. So you're known as Numot the Nummy. Did I say that
correct,
right?
Correct, yes.
Okay, where did that come from?
Oh, well, we have to go back into the Dark Ages when I was just a wee cute little Asian boy. let's see. It was back when I first started playing EDH, actually, with my group of high school friends that really got to play Magic with me a lot. Let's see, that was probably senior year of high school was when it really started to develop our EDH gameplay. And Numot the Devastator was my general.
Okay.
So Numot is a 6/6 flying dragon, you know. His ability is if he hits a player, he can destroy two lands if you pay two colorless and red. Anyways, it was my favorite card. It was my very first EDH general. And I was like, hey, you know what? I'm going to make a Magic Online account. What am I going to name myself? And first thought was, let's name it after my EDH general because Numot's great. And then I tried to get cute. I tried to make some alliteration. For some reason, Numot the Nummy came to my mind. You know, like Nummy when you're trying to like feed a baby or something, and it's like num num nummy. You know, I don't know. And it's too late to change it now to anything that would be more relevant or more cute. I'm embarrassed.
No, you should be. It's very nice. It's very nice. Was there anything about, like, the flavor of the character that attracted you to the commander? Because I've heard a lot of theories about why people pick their commanders and, like, what goes into it and if it has anything to do with, like, your personality. Do you buy into that at all?
I do, but for Numot, for my very first EDH general, it was kind of like, you know, I just want to do those colors, red, white, and blue. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. It was just those colors were convenient. I had a lot – oh, you know what it was? I had a lot of rares in my rare binder for red, white, and blue, and I was like, let's build an EDH deck out of those colors. So no more than my rare binder had more color or more quote-unquote good cards of those colors.
I thought it was just because you were devastating.
Like. Well, you know what? I didn't want to say anything. I thank you for bringing that up. I am pretty dashing and devastating.
It's funny because I only have one commander deck. It's the first commander deck I've ever had, and my commander is Omnath.
Oh, yes.
And I chose that for a number of reasons because I love all things O. I'm Estrus, an original Estrus and double O, and I love that it was an O name, and I love that it was sort of this gender-neutral type elemental character, which I really related to, and I loved the unpredictability of it, where when I saw my friend Tifa playing the deck, I'm sure you know Tifa, it kind of just snuck up on you. So, like, I remember playing, and I was like, oh, that's really cute, and we're all kind of playing, and she's like, it's 34, 34, 39, 39, and you're looking at it going, we shouldn't have left you alone all this
and
time.
And you still have all that mana floating, too, right?
Right. Like, And that was kind of the play style that I like. I like that unassuming, don't worry about me, and then all of a sudden you're like, yeah, you should have worried about me. I really related to that. So.
Well, at least you had, you had a more personal connection to your general than I did, I guess.
Yeah. So you wrote an article for Mana Deprived, and you kind of went into your background a little bit, and you said that you started playing Magic at 10 years old.
Yep, just about there, yep.
And you said you were introduced at a family gathering, which you described as the large Asian kind.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Okay. So my father's side, he has many brothers and sisters. My grandmother was, or the, like their entire family was Catholic. So, you know, they did the whole Catholic produce a lot of children thingy. And so anytime, you know, it's Easter, Christmas, whatever, any holiday, we'll always have this huge family gathering at somebody's house where, you know, there are 30, 40 people. Just, you know, and mainly it's my father's side and family, friends and that and whatnot. But anyways, all the cousins are running around and stuff. You know, I'm 10 years old. I have older cousins. You know, I look up to them. And one of my older cousins, his name was Dan, or his name is Daniel. He used to play Magic quite frequently. And, you know, he'd always be playing with the cards when I came over or when he came over, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know, the picture, the art was what really drew me in at first. I didn't know how to play. I just kind of collected the cards here and there. You know, I'd buy a pack every now and then just to kind of look at it, read it, you know, and look at the art. And then maybe a year or two after that is when I fully started actually playing the game. Not you know, very good at all, just kind of the bare basics. But it was at this initial large Asian family gathering when I was 10 years old. My cousin introduced it to me, so that was pretty fun.
Now, did you go about learning the game? Like, did you read the – were you around when they had rule books?
Yes.
And they came with a really – okay, so did you read the rule book and learn that way, or did you learn more by watching?
I did both. I would – like, some of the starter pack – I guess they don't call them starter. They were, like, tournament packs. It was, like, you had three boosters or something. It was really weird. Back in the day, I don't remember exactly, but they'd have all those little rule booklets, and I would read the whole thing. I didn't understand it all, but I would read it. It was – with most things, I guess it's with the experience that you get playing it that you'd start to learn it better.
Mm-hmm.
So,
now, did you enjoy the competitive aspect of it back then, or were you fine sort of just being fun and casual with it?
Oh, I'm a very, very competitive person. I've been competitive my entire life, so this fit perfectly into my wheelhouse of things. Let's see, when I started playing chess in kindergarten, and I played that all the way up until college.
Really?
Yeah, I was high school captain of my team. In fifth grade, I went to chess nationals. It was down in, I think, California that year. And I went 7-1-1 or something. And I have this 5-foot-tall trophy from when I was in fifth grade. It was, at the time, the trophy was just about as tall as I was. And it was really great. So I think the transition from chess to Magic was quite nice. A lot of the same kind of ideas and stuff. You know, you have to control the board. You have to make certain plays. You have to think ahead a lot of steps. So,
You said something interesting though. You said you went 7-1-1 at chess.
Mm-hmm.
So that means you got a draw in a chess game.
Yeah, draws are a huge part of chess.
Really?
Yeah.
How does that work?
There are what's called stalemates. So if nobody has a good move, or do you know how to play chess?
Not really.
Vaguely? Okay. Well, so if the enemy king cannot make a move, and he has no other pieces that are on the board, or no other pieces can move, it's a draw. It's called a stalemate. And then in more competitive Magic tournaments, people often draw just, you know, to get into the upper brackets. Kind of like in Magic tournaments, people draw, you know, if they're guaranteed somewhere, a place.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It's interesting that you had something you could fall back on as a child that sort of prepared you for competitive Magic, because I have a tilting problem, and we'll certainly talk about that in a few, but I really kind of regret not being in any sort of competitive events when I was a child, because I feel like maybe if I was, I would be more prepared for losing, and I would have learned certain skills that I could be applying now, and I wasn't in chess, and I wasn't in any sports, and I was very much the bookworm, and, you know, I didn't really have a lot of friends, and that's something I kind of wish I could do over again is get myself involved in things then that I could be using now.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad my parents put me into chess. It was a great starting point for, you know, just branching out in all types of things.
Mm-hmm. So you've also mentioned you went to your first large event. You went to GP Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
And you made mention of the fact that you tilted and you became what you called Dark Kenji.
Yes.
Tell me about Dark Kenji.
Okay. Dark Kenji is something that KYT called me. So he originated the name. I adopted it and stuck with it. What had happened was, this is my very first GP, right? I was super excited. I've been grinding online for many, many years at that point, I guess. Up until that point, I had only been making videos on YouTube for Magic, so, you know, I wasn't known or anything like that. Get to GP Montreal, you know, the day before, I enter a grinder, snap, crush it, get my three buys, feeling really, really good. I think the format was M12 or something, M11. Anyways, it's one of the M sets.
A sealed
format. Yeah, correct. Limited sealed. I open my pool or whatever. It gets passed to me, and it's great. You know, it's red-black, lots of removal, lots of bombs. I'm feeling really great. I think it had two or three Doom Blades, which is insane. You know, Grim Lavamancer, Soren's Thirst. It was just the pool that you want to open. So I started with three buys, crushed the first three rounds, I think. It was either crush the first rounds or lose one. Anyways, somehow I ended up 6-1, just need to win one of the next two rounds to make it to day two. Mm-hmm. And this is my very first GP. I'm super excited. I just, if I make it to day two, I'm going to be speechless. I'm just going to, you know, not talk the rest of the tournament, just kind of like play a card and be like, go, you know, something like that. round eight. So 6-1 at this point. I kind of just get rolled over, you know, mulligans or whatever, just the natural part of Magic. Round nine, I'm 6-2. This is my winning in. I'm nervous, excited, everything. I throw it all away. I make some terrible plays, and I think it was stress and just this, you know, being there for the first time in that situation, that led me to make some terrible plays. Anyways, I lost that match 6-3. I didn't qualify for day two, and I kind of just sunk into myself that whole time. I wasn't like, you know, angry at my opponent or anything. I was very courteous to them, you know, good game, blah, blah, blah. But after walking away from the table, it just felt like I'd done something terrible. I had lost a piece of myself almost. And I was hanging out with the mana deprived guys after day one, and, you know, I was just sulking. I was just sulking. And that's where KYT started calling me Dark Kenji, because I was like angry and sad and just, I don't know. It was heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking.
So you internalize your tilt versus letting it
out. Yeah, I try not to, you know, to let other people see or get the better of my emotions, rather.
Mm-hmm. Is that hard to do when you're on a stream and you've got hundreds of people watching you, and, you know, there might be times where you really want to say something or you really want to, you know, express your unhappiness with something and you can't because there's all those eyes on you?
Oh, it's a lot different on stream. On the stream, yeah. I almost never hold myself back. You know, I'll visibly, you can tell that I'm kind of perturbed, I guess. I am tilting. I think I tilted today, in fact. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's on stream. I feel like I have to entertain, so people almost want to see the tilt. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah, right? Because they want to see the person they're watching react maybe in a way that's not what you're supposed to do, right? Mm-hmm. And certainly, if I'm at a GP or something, I'm going to be very courteous to my opponent. But I guess when I'm streaming, you know, my opponent can't see me unless they're watching the stream themselves. I don't feel as bad if I'm just like, oh, God, they got so damn freaking lucky, you know, and I just kind of stomp my feet on the ground and join another queue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something I've definitely worried about, you know, the bigger my show has gotten. And I feel like I've gotten better at the tilt, but that's something I do worry about now is, you know, there are people who do recognize me, and there are people who, you know, I have the sticker representing my show on my life pad, and it's like, okay, if I tilted this guy, he's going to look down and see the sticker on my badge or see the sticker on my name pad, and I can't do that anymore.
Yeah, and it just sticks with you, right?
Yeah.
You just don't want that impression on somebody.
Yeah, but at the same time, though, you know, you're right in that people do want to see that. Like, I've had people say to me, you know, you are the only one who talks about tilt. And, you know, anytime you see a pro write an article, it's usually as simple as, well, just don't tilt! And it's like, well, that's not really the case, you know. And I have had people say, you know, I do that. I feel that way. I get it, you know, and I like that. I like that relatability that comes with somebody like that. So that's a cool connection to make.
Yeah, but...
So, sorry.
Don't go ahead.
No, you're the guest. You first.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, again, try not to tilt. I think it happens to everybody, you know, it's just part of the game. You want to win, right? That's the end point of the goal, or the goal of the game, usually, to win the game. There are bad beats. They happen. I'm going to keep dancing or whatever on stream if I lose. but it's a lot different in person versus on stream.
Absolutely. So you mentioned starting your stream, and I know people start streams for different reasons. Like, I know some people have started them as a way to get others to watch them play and sort of critique their plays and things like that. Some people just like having an audience and they like being entertaining. What made you want to get started with streaming?
I just wanted to have some people watch me and get their input on my gameplay. I thought I was good enough at that point that, you know, I could potentially teach some people, but I could certainly learn a lot still. That being said, as the stream grew, it became something more I wanted to do because I wanted to get, you know, more people to watch me. So I wanted to get recognized more. I wanted to get more, quote unquote, fame, I guess. Mm-hmm. So as it continues to grow, I think that's the driving force at this point. I just want to keep getting my name out there. I don't know if that sounds a little pompous, but
no,
that's the point of it now, I guess.
Would you be happy doing what you do if you weren't a big name? Like, let's say you had started your stream and you were doing okay, but you weren't at the level you're at now. Would you have been fine with that?
I don't know. I don't think I would have gone for some of the challenges that I would have done had it not been that popular. If it was, you know, if it was only a few hundred people watching me at a time, I don't know if I would have felt it would have been worth it.
It's interesting that you say that because I know so many people who would kill for a couple hundred people. That would be a big deal to them, and you're sort of like, oh, that's just peanuts.
Well, the thing is, like, when I started and even, like, the first year of streaming, getting a few hundred was mind-blowing. You know, I didn't even expect it would get that big. So I think because where I am now, I'm less entitled, or I feel... I'm getting all jumbled up here. I feel like I need to keep raising the ceiling, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel pressure to do that? Like, you know, with the success, did there come a sort of pressure of, oh, God, what do I do? It's getting big. I got to keep people happy. Did you feel that at all?
Oh, for sure. I call it a show. I compare my show to anything like a sitcom you would watch on TV, right? You have to be somewhat consistent, you know, so people know when you're going to be streaming. You'll get more viewers that way. It has to be entertaining, you know. I've said this before, you could be a professional, you could be on the pro tour, you know, have multiple top eights, but if you're kind of just droning on, I'm just going to take this card here because, well, it's clearly the best card in the pack, blah, 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 you know, and you don't have any enthusiasm or...
Personality.
Yeah, personality to you. It's just not going to click with the viewers. Mm-hmm. And so
I definitely think that's it's a juggling act. You know, I've watched a lot of streams because I'm always on the hunt for new personalities and people to have on the show. And it is a juggling act of being, you know, you want to keep people watching you for your skills. Like, they want to see a good game of Magic.
Yep.
But you can't completely ignore the chat, but you also can't focus on the chat to the exclusion of your play. And you have to involve them but not play and do everything they tell you to do. It's a lot. It really is a lot.
It is. People don't realize it, but it's very draining. Like, not physically, but mentally, just constantly, you know, monitoring all these aspects of the stream. It's weird, though, because some of the other big games that are on Twitch.tv, which is the streaming site, like League of Legends or Diablo 3, people don't really... There's not as much interaction, per se. They're just watching a very good player. But with Magic, it's a little bit different. You know, and some of the streamers are certainly... there for their skill, and a lot of people watch them for that, but I'd put entertainment above play skill, I think.
Mm-hmm. How do do you feel about the fact that streaming has sort of blown up and that everybody and their mom has a stream now? Like, is that something you're cool with and you're happy to see it sort of turn up like that, or do you think that maybe it should just be, you know, the you know what I mean, like the good ones, or, you know, whatever, diluting the pool, if you will?
No, I think it's great that streaming's really blowing up. I consider myself very, very lucky that I got into streaming pretty early in its life, right? So I think because I got into it so early, I was able to capitalize on that, and, you know, people started watching me. I think as soon as you get the ball rolling, it's like a snowball effect, right? You just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's what I recommend to people if they want to get into streaming, is that they just keep, you know, keep pursuing it. Because the first year I was streaming, I wasn't getting very many viewers at all. It's just something that, you know, clicks all of a sudden.
With that said, though, you know, with all of the streams out there, and people can choose to watch anybody play, what do you think makes you stand out from that? Like, if you wanted me to, like, let's say, sell somebody on you, how would you describe yourself, or how would you like me to describe you?
No shame, decent play skill.
Cute.
Cute. I forgot to mention handsome. Excuse me, not cute.
Oh.
Handsome.
Oh, sorry.
Dreamy, you know, just... the best. I don't know what to say beyond that, you know, just the best in the world.
Yep, there you go. Because there are a lot of faces, and there are a lot of names, and they do start to turn into a blur after a while. And, you know, I always have the mindset of, if you're going to do something, you know, set yourself apart and bring something fresh to the table. And I'm not saying you don't, but, you know, for somebody who, you know, might be listening to this, they might go, well, how is he different than this guy? And I get it. I totally do. So now walk me through what it's like being a, because you do make a living off of this, correct? Okay, so you mentioned a couple of things in your article. You said that first off you became a partner with Twitch, and then you said that you had to apply for, and then ultimately you were accepted into their subscriber program.
Yes.
So what does this mean? Like, walk me through the process.
All right, and this is different now than from when I went through the process.
Okay.
So I'll go over both, I guess.
Sure.
When I started streaming, getting partnership itself was even a big deal. And this is the one that you need, the precursor to getting subscriber status.
Okay.
They had certain marks that you had to reach. It was either every month or every week in order to get partnership or subscriber. Mm-hmm. And partnership is just the bare bones. If you become a partner with Twitch, it's not that big of a deal. There are tons and tons of partners. It just means that you have the capability of clicking a little button, it'll run an ad, and then based on how many people see the ad, you get paid at the end of the month based on, you know, all these ad clicks and whatnot.
Okay.
For subscriber, you have to be even bigger than that. You have to have a pretty decent following. You have to have a certain amount of viewers that watch you every time you turn on. They're called concurrent viewers. And once you get that, you get this sub button. You can set a little amount. Mine's currently $4.99. If somebody subs to you, they get all these special perks and emoticons. Twitch gets half that money, and the streamer gets half. Anyways, when I first started streaming, getting partnership was a huge deal for me because, again, they had these tiers that you had to reach in order to get it. And eventually I hit it, which allowed me to run ads. And let me tell you, ads do not make you very much when you only have a few hundred people watching you at any given time. And like I said, that was a huge deal because you had to, you know, get like a million page views in a week or something like that to even hit that.
Wow.
And that's a huge amount, right? Nowadays, just about anybody can get partnership as long as you have, I don't know how many people. There's not really a set line. You kind of just ask for it, and if they're like, oh, okay, you can have it, then you get it.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing for subscribers these days. There used to be a baseline that you had to have, like, I think it was like 1,000 concurrent viewers or maybe 2,000 to get sub status. And nowadays you can have a lot less to hit that number. But yeah, at a certain point, I was getting big enough where I did ask for subscriber status. I think I was the second Magic stream to have it. Paul Cheon, I don't know if you've had him on before.
No.
Paul Cheon was the very first person to get subscriber status for Magic, streaming Magic online.
Wow.
Then again, he was also, I think, the first person to ask for it. Because at that point, you know, I had a lot more followers and a lot more concurrent viewers than he did. And so as soon as I saw that he got it, I was like, oh, I better get on. And, you know, I asked for it and I got it instantly. So that was pretty nice. But going on about the job or the, you know, doing this full time, it wasn't actually until I was, and I don't know if you want to get into this right now, but it wasn't until 7 or 8 months into one of my 365-day streaming challenge that I was able to do that. And so that was all, you know, I was still working a different job while streaming, and that my days were just eating up the hours.
So I want to go back a bit and talk about the subscriber button.
Okay, sorry.
It's something I'm a little confused about. No, you're totally fine. You're totally fine. So is that a one-time payment, or is that something I would be paying every month? How does that work?
Yeah, it recurs monthly.
Okay.
You actually have to go in and click that you do not want to recur. They kind of, you know, like all businesses, they kind of hook you that way. If you don't unclick it, then you'll just keep paying the sub button every month. And along with that, you know, you get all these perks that I was mentioning before. For my specific channel, you get, I think it's 8 or 9 special emoticons. Sometimes there's, like, giveaways and stuff like that.
Okay.
It's not too relevant. It's just a way to help support the streamer. And then you get some, you know, nice little perks.
Well, one of the perks is that we get to see your famous new subscriber dance.
Oh, yes.
Where did that come from? Because that is adorable.
I don't actually know. I think I just did something weird one time and then, you know, added on to that and added on to that. It didn't come from anything. It was just a culmination of multiple subs occurring and me just jamming all these weird things together. I'm so embarrassed whenever I do it, but at this point.
Oh, come on, do it for me now.
Oh, okay. All right. New subscriber! And then recently, at the end of it, I've been saying, hello, friends! So, again, it is like I said before, it's just a snowball of all these things that get added on together. Somehow Kermit got added in there. You know, now I have a Kermit video that I play whenever somebody subscribes, and I join him in his arm flailing. I know you can't see me right now, but I'm actually arm flailing.
It got to a point when I was watching your stream. I watched about 10 hours of your stream to sort of research, and it got to a point towards the end where I was fast-forwarding just to see the new subscriber dance. So I would see you do it, and you keep track of the subscribers that you get in each session in the corner of the screen or whatever,
yeah.
If I went too far, I would see the number go up. It's like, oh, I missed a subscriber, and I
go back.
And I never got tired of watching it. It was so much fun.
I will say this. It's all right if I'm doing it like 5 or 10 times a day, but it's the days that, you know, the subs get up to 40 or 50 where my voice is hoarse. I've like pulled an arm muscle or something. It's completely bonkers.
You just end up sounding like Amy Winehouse.
Exactly.
Like, and then subscriber.
It's not even arm playing. I kind of just raise my arms and wiggle, you know? It's like,
You're just kind of like, I'll get you later.
Yeah.
So you brought up a really good point. Eventually you got to a point where you could quit your job and do this full time.
Yeah.
Did you have any sort of backup plan for this, or were you pretty sure this was going to work out?
I wasn't pretty sure it was going to work out. You know, at that point, I was making enough where I could sustain myself. I'm pretty frugal with my money. I had saved up enough that I could get at least finish the end of the year challenge before I'd have to look for something again, but I didn't really have a backup plan. So I know that's stupid too, but
no, not at all.
Well, I think it is. I think I should have. But no, I kind of just went for it, and it's worked out so far.
How did your family and friends react to this? Like, did you tell them you were doing this?
Oh yeah, for sure. My mom was very supportive. She was like, you know, go for it, but just make sure you're thinking about what you're going to do. You know, if this doesn't work out, but go for it as long as you can. And then my dad was more like, well, you know, is this really a job, or what's your future going to be like? What's the end point? What's the end goal? Overall, they were both supportive, but they were both worried that, you know, it was going to cap at some point, and what were my future prospects going to be?
So without getting into too much detail, like, I certainly don't expect you to give me numbers, but I mean, is this more of like a commission-based job or like the income fluctuates, or do you really have like a good stable income from this?
The most stable income from streaming is always going to come from your subscriber basis and like sponsors and stuff like that. Because ad revenue is very, very, like the fluctuation is very, very high.
Okay.
It depends on if you've remembered to run ads that day, which I'm pretty diligent about doing now. It's very seasonal as well, the ads that get run. It depends on who's watching, because not everybody gets an ad. It depends on location, stuff like that. And if people are running ad block, then they're not helping to support you.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to have, I would say you need very least subscriber status and some sponsors to make this thing work. Mm-hmm. And sponsorship is completely off of the Twitch payroll. Because you only get paid from Twitch for your subs and your ads from the partnership.
Mm-hmm. It sounds a little scary, like, when you're describing it. Like, I don't know if I could make that leap. Like, I know I had Marshall Sutcliffe on my show, and he had described how he had quit his job, his full-time job, to do what he loves to do. And maybe it's just me, but it didn't sound like there was a safety net there. And yours, in particular, sounds a little bit more, you know, swingy, where it's like, yeah, you could have that really great month, or maybe you don't, and I don't know if I could do that.
It is very, very swingy. Paychecks are the difference between paychecks is sometimes hundreds of dollars just because the ads are just not there for 1 month as opposed to another. And that's, you know, that's kind of, well, that's not kind of, that's absolutely scary, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why you need that basis that you can, you know, you know you're going to get at least this much a month to fall back on.
Yeah. So in addition to quitting your job and making this your job, you decided to up the ante and you set a goal for yourself that you were going to stream every day for a year. What made you decide that you wanted to do this?
Stupidity.
Had this ever been done before?
Oh, yeah. People have done it before. Okay. That's where I got the initial idea. Somebody that actually lives in Bellingham, Washington, so just, you know, like an hour north of me, had done a year live stream challenge before. He actually finished a 2-year live stream challenge. How crazy is that? 2 years streaming every day. Ugh. Anyways, I'd watched him, you know, I was like, hey, you know what? I think I can do this. I love Magic. I want to play it every day. It also coincided with me moving out of my parents' place, so I had a lot more freedom. A lot more freedom, you know, just didn't have to do chores or whatnot. Could really just do whatever I wanted, and streaming was what I wanted to do at that time. The commitment, yeah, it was scary. The first few months of it, you know, I still have that kind of adrenaline boost of streaming, but geez, as time progressed, it completely sucked my soul out. I'll tell you that right now.
What happened?
Oh, it's just draining, completely draining, like knowing, and I'm one of those people that, you know, if I've said I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it, right? Just waking, knowing you have to wake up every day and do something even though you don't want to do it necessarily. And I hadn't, like, during the 365-day stream, I hadn't quit my other job at that point. It wasn't until 8 months in that I started making enough. And so, like I said before, I worked night crew. All right, did I already tell you that?
I think so.
Oh, yeah. So I worked night crew at a grocery store, meaning this was, okay, here was my day layout. I would go to work and be there at 11 p.m. to start.
Wow.
I would do my night crew job at the grocery store until 7:30 a.m. I would get home around 8. I would, you know, take a shower, go to bed, fall asleep by like 9, wake up at like 3, start to stream for X amount of hours until I had to go to work again, and then rinse and repeat, go to work at 11 p.m. Ugh, it was physically tiring as well.
Yeah. And you did that every day.
Well, 5 days a week at the store, but stream every day. So there were some days where I had a little time off, you know.
So what motivated you to keep going? Because, I mean, I can think of, I don't know many people who could have lasted that long.
You know what? I don't know what kept me going. I don't think there's anything that really really.
So there was no point where you thought, like, because it was hard, you know? Was there ever a point where you wanted to just call it or stop, or did it ever cross your mind?
There were days where I didn't want to stream, sure, but, you know, it was still convenient because I don't know what I would be doing otherwise. I was still at home. The computer was right there. I'd be on the computer anyways. I was probably going to be playing Magic anyways. It just lined up with my schedule anyways, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to talk about your stream a little bit because I enjoy your stream for one particular reason. I feel like your stream is one of the most positive streams out there in terms of the atmosphere surrounding it. And what I mean by that is, I'm going to name names here because that's what I do. I love Travis, big fan of Travis Wu.
Okay.
But I feel like Travis sometimes gets bogged down by the haters because he does attract a lot of criticism and people don't want him to have fun, and they do look for reasons to sort of pop his balloon or whatever. And it does sometimes weigh on him a little bit, and sometimes he just, you know, will stop. And he's like, I just don't want to deal with it right now. Sometimes the people in the stream can be a little nasty. And then there's a gentleman named Michael Jacob. Mm-hmm. I did not enjoy Michael Jacob. I thought he was a little coarse. I didn't get a very friendly vibe from him. I got a very cocky vibe almost. But when I was watching you, it was very positive. Like, the people in your chat were positive. You were clearly having fun. I didn't have this feeling like you were so much better than I was. I had the feeling like you really wanted to be there. It was just a really good atmosphere all around. How important is it for you to maintain that? Like, do you believe that's a big thing for you?
Yeah, I think so. I compare my stream to like a TV show or something, and entertainment value is number one. If somebody's not having fun, or if chat's really getting on somebody's case, it's maybe not even mine. It's just, you know, they're bad talking another person in the stream, then I try to make them stop that. I'll time them out. I'll ban them again, you know, if they keep it up. I consider myself a pretty friendly person, or a pretty jovial person. I never want to talk badly about anybody. I always just want to play the game, have some fun. You know, we'll force five color Chromanticore anytime we open it, stuff like that. It's not about winning always, although it certainly helps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it. You know what? I think it's just I'm so used to the internet now. There are so many trolls. I just ignore them. There are so many trolls. People will try and come out and just get the worst reaction from you. And if you can just ignore them, or if you can put them in their place, just by, you know, taking the bait. Even that's what I do sometimes. I'll take the bait and I'll go along with what they're trying to do to me. Just like sometimes, I don't know an example here. I can't remember off the top of my head because it's been so long, but, you know, people are like, oh God, why are you so, you know, why did you do that? You're so stupid, blah, blah, blah. You're so terrible. God, you should just quit this game. And I'm like, oh, so-and-so, whatever the name is, you know, I really feel sorry that you feel that way, man. Do you want to talk about it? Cause I, there's something deeper here that you need to tell me. And I've done this multiple times on stream when somebody, and people are just like, oh, LOL, troll get trolled. And so we try to keep it fun.
Another thing I'm really curious about is there's also a section of streamers that I find they really buy into the hero worship of it, where when you get enough followers, the chat starts to turn into almost this, I don't know what the word is, maybe sycophant, but they really prop these people up. And it's, oh, you're awesome. Your deck is the best. You never do wrong. And I'm not going to name names here, but there are a couple of streamers that you can tell really buy into their hype, and they really seem to live for that rush, and they live for that response. You've got a lot of followers. I mean, how do you stay grounded? How do you not buy into your hype like that?
I just know that there are a lot of people that are better at Magic than I am.
Yeah?
Yeah, and so I'm like, you know, this deck might be good, but, you know, we could have done this, or at this point I took this card over that card and it was probably wrong. I don't think I'm at the level where I have the right to be like, oh, well, this is correct, this is correct, this is correct, and maybe not even give a reason to them. So.
Yeah, it seems like it's just like I said, there were a couple of streamers I watched, and you could see this like glimmer in their eyes where they were thinking, oh my God, these people are telling me everything I want to hear. And I was like, maybe you're not streaming for the right reasons, because I was a little disturbed watching it, where they were clearly soaking it all in and people are spawning over them. And I was kind of worried about that. And, you know, especially seeing the numbers that you have, it's like, you know, was there ever a time where you bought into that, or have you always been grounded?
I think I've been grounded for the most part. I mean, there are certainly times where you start to lean into the, oh, well, maybe I am that, or maybe I am that, you know, something like that. But I try to keep myself on the ground and make sure that everybody's having a good time and that, you know, they know I don't think I'm better than them at something.
Mm-hmm. It definitely makes you more approachable.
Yeah, I think so. That being said, you know, there are people in chat, and I don't know if they're just trying to get a weird response that consistently tell you something that's clearly not correct. And then not only will other people in the chat get on their case about it, but then you're kind of like, well, yeah, buddy, but, you know, this is just the way it is. You know, yeah, I mean, you don't want to be mean, but sometimes you just kind of got to be a little bit rigid.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it goes back to, you know, going back to Marshall Sutcliffe, you know, I had asked him a similar question because he does commentary, and then that is a very critical thing. Mm-hmm. People are really critical of that part of magic. Yes. And I asked him how he deals with the feedback, and he was like, you know, I certainly listen to all feedback. He's like, I will never not listen. He's like, but there are times where I will say, thank you for expressing that. I'm still going to do this now. And that's a good attitude, you know, because, you know, you know, when you have listeners and you have an audience of any kind, you know, there is almost a sense of entitlement where they do feel like you have to listen and you have to do what they say. And if you don't, that makes you bad. And I really appreciated that he said that, where, you know, it's not that I'm not listening to you, but I've got to do my own thing and I'm happy with this. And I don't think your criticism, you know, is right now, or it's not right for me. And sometimes you just have to draw that line.
Well, I completely agree. And I've known Marshall. We used to play at the same FNM almost every Friday with each other. And so, you know, I've really got to know him well through the years. And I think he's rubbed off on me a little bit, because I really do look up toward him. And just the way he, I don't know, goes about taking the criticisms or taking the things that people, you know, put onto him.
Yeah, I don't know how he does it.
He's also very tall, right? So.
He also looks like he's lost some weight lately. Like, he definitely, not that he was ever an unattractive man, but since I've seen him lately on coverage, it was like, Marshall's cleaned up, or he went to the dentist, as they call it. You know, he looks a little shinier.
It's the makeup they put on him. It's just an illusion. Don't worry about that.
Oh, man. I totally want to, like, go up to him and, like, you know, like, did you ever see the movie The Birdcage?
Is that with Robin Williams. What's it?
Nathan Lane?
Yes, I did.
There's a part where Nathan Lane's trying to play it straight, and Robin Williams, like, takes his finger and rubs it down his cheek. And when he realizes there's makeup on it, he smears it on the wall. I totally want to go up to Marshall Sutcliffe and be like, Marshall!
just see it and smear.
Right, and then if there's none, I'll be like, oh, okay, I owe someone $5. But if there's makeup, I just want to, like, smear it on a wall. Like, oh, gotcha.
You can tell him I sent you. You'll appreciate that.
So, in regards to your stream, though, you have made comments to the effect of whether or not you should keep doing this, or how long you can keep doing this, or, as you put it, find a grown-up job, with quotation marks. Do you still feel that way, or do you see this being more long-term than you thought?
It's certainly more long-term than I thought, for sure, especially with all the subs I have, the loyal followers. I think I owe it to them almost just to keep streaming, but not necessarily as, you know, my sole source of income, my full-time job. I think if I just stream, you know, maybe even just one draft every now and then, I think that'd be nice just for them. With Magic, it's a little bit weird. Magic is very, very niche as far as online games are concerned, or just streaming is concerned in general. Like, people can just tune into League of Legends or something, watch it for even just 10 minutes, you know, and get the general idea of who's going to win or whatever. I guess that is also true of Magic, but it's a lot harder to get into Magic than a game that's like a first-person shooter, or just one where you can click, 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 you know, and, oh, I killed your dude. I compare it to chess. You know, there's a lot more just decision-making. It's a lot harder for people to get attached to it. It's a lot harder for people to learn it. It's not really a game that's promoted well. No, that's not the right phrase, but...
Well, I have heard that before. I have heard people say that the streaming, especially in regards to commentary, you know, people wonder why League of Legends will get so many more views than, say, the commentary at a GP will or a Pro Tour. Well, I have heard that before.
I guess that's fair. It's just, I don't know. It's not widely as accessible. It's very expensive, too, to note, right? Because, those other games, you know, you pay once and you can play it forever. With Magic, if you want to play, you have to keep investing unless you're winning enough where that doesn't have to be a thing. So, I think I'm going to look, which I should have done already, look for something that I can do, you know, that I'd want to do for an actual quote-unquote job, and then I'll keep streaming on the side. I don't know when that is. I mean, I might stream for another year. Mm-hmm. It's just something to think about.
What do you think about, or how do you feel when you think about scaling back the stream, or, you know, you have those thoughts of giving it up? You know, is it hard to think about?
Yeah, it's become part of my life, part of who I am, right? Even all my friends are like, oh, you know, have you streamed today, or are you going to stream today? And I'm like, yeah, or I have, or yeah, I need to. I don't know, it's going to be weird not to have somebody watch me play Magic now, or at least have some people talking about what I'm doing, whether I, you know, punted terribly or drafted a sick five color deck, whatever it is. It's just the change will be hard. The change will be weird.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a part of your identity almost. Yeah. You know, like it's a part of who you are, and it's very weird to, you know, I kind of went through that when I quit World of Warcraft, where it was like, and it's a little different than, you know, what you're going through, but, you know, I had that. I remember the night I quit raiding. I don't know if I've ever told anybody this story. I'm sorry if I have, but I quit raiding, and I actually quit full-time to just play Magic. So I was playing WoW and Magic when I first came back to Magic. Okay. And I remember the night I decided to quit WoW, and I had just started dating a new guy at the time, and he had never seen me cry before. So this was the first time he ever saw me cry. Not exactly the way Taylor Swift does it, but, you know, I still did it my way. And I remember I called him up. And it was one of those situations where you're fine until someone asks you how you're doing.
Yes.
So I call them, and he's like, you know, I'm trying not to talk about it. So I'm like, work was really good today, and it's a little cold outside, and I had this amazing barbecue chicken. And he's like, baby, what's the matter? And I was like, I don't love raiding anymore. And I had this big meltdown. And he didn't understand. He's like, okay, so quit the game. And I was like, you don't understand. I was like, you know, this is me. I was like, Estrus is me. The healing is me. Raiding is me. If I don't have this, what do I have? Like, okay, so I work at a bank. Big deal. Okay, I make this much a year. I live in a loft. I don't have that. And I didn't know what I had if I didn't have that. What am I good at if I'm not raiding, if I'm not healing? And I went through that identity crisis, too, where it becomes a part of you, mm-hmm. that identity that you have, and you do feel like you're losing a part of yourself. And especially when you're good at it, you know, you're like, what am I good at? Like, what do I have to be proud of? And, I felt that, too.
That's funny that you mentioned WoW, because I used to raid very, very hardcore with WoW as well. I used to play a rogue, and I was in a...
Oh, all the Asian boys played rogue.
Well, of course, clearly. I'm just saying, clearly.
In every guild I was in, and I mean, and I was in a lot of guilds. I admit I was a bit of a guild hopper, and I mean that with love, because they were amazing rogues, but we always had at least one Asian guy rogue. And in situations, I remember there was one guild I was in, and there were two, and God help us, they were trouble. We could never find them. Like, whenever we would go for trash packs, and they were always just causing shenanigans, and they all played blood elves. They were all female blood elves, and it was just havoc.
Oh, no, I was a gnome rogue named Raul Castro. It was
Kenji Paul Igashira. You were Alliance?
Of course I was Alliance. Clearly.
You are dead to me, sir.
But I was on that raiding train as well. Every night at 8 p.m. we'd log on, we'd do raid for, you know, 4 or 5 hours. Mm-hmm. That was back in college too, so I was, you know, just doing Magic on the side in my free time.
Wow.
Man, I was a complete hermit in college.
So if you weren't streaming, you know, what do you think you'd be doing? Like, what would you like to do with yourself?
When I was a little kid, I always wanted to be an entomologist, so I wanted to study insects.
Really?
That was when I was a little kid.
Okay.
It's still cool. I love biology and stuff like that. Then when I went to college, I got my degree in both anthropology and sociology. I really wanted to study primates. That was my main thing for anthropology. I wanted to study primates.
Well, I mean, you could still kind of do that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I mean, have you seen some of the people that come to events? I mean, like,
I consider my Magic streaming a social experiment in and of itself, right?
Yeah.
But after graduating college, I was like, you know what? I don't want to do this, or at least not for a job. And so now here I am, kind of just floating in the ether, just wondering what I'm going to do.
And there's nothing like you. There's nothing like you're thinking about, or you really want to do. Like there's nothing at all.
Oh, I really want to get into voice acting. Actually, I haven't done it for some time now, but I used to freelance voice act, and then just post almost every week onto this forum on what's it called now? I think it's called LibriVox, and just record myself reading these, free online books or poems, just a chapter or two, and then everybody would record a chapter, and then they'd all put it together, and so you'd have an online book where, with just like 10 different people reading it to you, and that's how I practice my chops, I guess.
Are you any good at accents?
Probably, no, not.
Okay, because I can do accents pretty well.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. I was at a friend's birthday party once, and this was right around the time that 50 Shades of Grey came out.
Okay.
And so I would read different passages in different voices. So, for example, I would do the southern voice. So I'd be like, as Christian touched me in my nether regions, I could tell something was bubbling like I've never seen before. And then I would do like my Jersey section or my Bronx section. So I'd be like, and then this one time he made me sign this contract, and I knew I didn't want to do this, but I really love him, so I didn't know what I was supposed to do. And I would just read different passages like that. And I thought about getting into it too, but I have no idea like how to start. So if you can lead me down that road, I would love to do it.
Yeah, it's really hard. It's a pretty elite, I guess, club. Like you have to create your own not playlist, but you create your own spot. Just like 3 minutes of you doing these just different voices, different ads and stuff like that. And it costs a lot of money to produce.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, not a lot of money, but it's hard to get into. And I think training is certainly something at least I would need to do to further myself in that.
So can you do a voice for me right now?
No. Too embarrassed.
What? Oh, can't you?
I know. I'm sorry.
Oh. Ugh, your alliance, and you won't do a voice for me. Why are we friends?
I want to go home now.
So one last thing.
Okay.
So last year, you were invited to participate in the 2013 Magic Online Community Cup.
Winning community cup. Big distinction.
Big distinction. It is a very big distinction. So how did it feel to be chosen for this? Because it is chosen by the community, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it is. Right?
I believe so.
Yeah, they put something online, and then I guess it's voted by the community, and then Wizards chooses from that pool, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Man, I was ecstatic to get chosen. I was very, 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 very thrilled. I don't remember how long into streaming I was, but I kind of had inklings that I was going to get chosen, when they first announced. Or when they announced that they were taking nominations for it, I was like, well, I've been doing this and I'm kind of getting big. I really hope I'm going to get chosen. And then when it happened, I wasn't surprised. I don't know if that's bad. I wasn't surprised that I had gotten chosen, just because I had become such a prominent Magic streamer. I just figured, that was something that would probably happen, because it's weird. A lot of it's Magic Online Community Cup, but a lot of the people that get invited to it, are just professionals. Maybe they don't really do any videos or stream like that. Mm-hmm. So I thought, just because I was so heavily using Magic Online, that I guess I thought I'd be invited, which I was. And we got there, and it was amazing. So thrilled, so happy. I don't know what to say about it. It was great.
You brought up something really interesting, actually. There has been a lot of talk about the fact of whether or not it should stay. There's talk about, like you said, there are some people who get invited that aren't necessarily that devoted to Magic Online, or that they dabble in it, or maybe they don't even play it at all. Do you think that it should be just a strictly online thing, or do you like that it's sort of, you know, poured into paper magic.
No, I like that they pull from both groups for sure. Yeah. Otherwise, you know, it wouldn't have the same allure, I guess. Like if you just have five random people, I guess it's eight random people, you know, that just play a lot of magic online, who's going to really care about that? I mean, sure, it's nice that you get to see them play against the Wizards members, but I think you need to invite people that don't necessarily play a lot of magic online just to get some draw to it.
Mm-hmm. So this was in 2013, so you were doing your 365 days of streaming while you were at the Cup?
Yep.
Wow.
Let's see, I streamed, I think, the first day of it, and then, and this might be cheating, so there's an asterisk next to my name, but I considered the Community Cup stream as my stream for 2 days.
Uh-oh.
Yes. I'm going to say it right now, for the first time, I'm not going to do another one. Another year.
But you would do another Community Cup.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I don't think you're allowed to go twice in consecutive years, but I think you are allowed to go back multiple times.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you do any sort of campaigning for that, or did you let the fans just sort of speak for themselves?
You know what? I didn't do any campaigning. I said, if you want to, yeah, I mean, I'd say on stream, you know, that's cool. If you want to vote for me, great. But I wasn't trying to really promote it like some of the bigger names do on Twitter, you know, the more high-profiler professional players.
I was seeing people toss names around when it wasn't even close to the ballot being out. Like, there have been times on Twitter I've seen them rile themselves into the storm, and I'll have to sort of remind myself, like, is it that time yet? And people are like, no, we don't even know why this is happening. And it's crazy how that comes up. There's just this weird burst of, I believe it's this person. And it's like, you're 7 months early. Like,
yeah, it just doesn't make sense. And I think they're just kind of jumping the gun. And I don't know. Some people just really want to go.
Yeah.
You know, I just figured I was well known enough and a big enough part of the Magic Online community that I would get there. Mm-hmm. So I didn't.
And you definitely did.
Yeah, I did. Yes.
I could listen to that all day long. Like, I could honestly just delete this whole show and just have you do that for 58 minutes. I'd be very fine with that. Or maybe I would just throw, like, a techno beat behind it, so, you know.
I am a very good rapper. I'm just going to say that right now.
You rap?
Well, I have rapped, but...
But like, you probably don't have one ready right now.
No. I did it on the Limited Resources podcast against Brian Wong.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we had a rap off at the end, and he got crushed by me. Not close.
Does he know that he got crushed, or would he say
everybody knows he got crushed.
Oh, okay.
Marshall voted for him, but it was clear. It was clear.
Bastard.
No, he had to vote for his co-host, clearly.
I suppose. Well, you are a man of many talents, Kenji. Rapper, voice actor, I mean streamer. You were a babysitter at one point.
I was.
YMCA.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, you've done a lot with your life, and I appreciate you coming on my show to talk about it. And I wish you luck with whatever you do. Like I said, I'm definitely a new fan. I do plan on hitting that subscribe button, and I hope that you continue doing this for as long as you can.
Well, thank you very much. It was fun being on.
Absolutely. And if people want to find you, if they've enjoyed what they've heard here on the show, where can they find you? How can they get a hold of you?
Sure. You can always follow me on Twitter under the same name given earlier, Numot the Nummy. That's NumotTheNummy. That's kind of a mouthful to say, isn't it? But at least it sounds good. Numot the Nummy.
It was very much like the Mickey Mouse jingle almost.
Yeah. NumotTheNummy. Sorry, I tried.
You'll have to work that into the new subscriber.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And then always on Twitch, just type in Numot the Nummy and I should be there almost every single day.
Well, I look forward to watching the stream. Like I said, I've been watching it at work lately, and I really do enjoy it. So thanks again.
Thank you.
And if anyone's enjoyed what you've heard here on the Deck Fuse, you can always find the show first and foremost on GatheringMagic.com. The show is also on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Please subscribe and leave me a positive review. You can also find out what's happening with the show on Twitter at the Deck Tease. I am on Twitter at OriginalEstrus, and you can email me personally at estrus@elitistjerks.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye!